Okay, so I'll talk about superconductors, it's a secret, and I'll sort of connect it to the theme of the conference in a more explicit way than the previous speakers, and focus on things like higher, how to go higher, and how to find applications beyond what we have been thinking. Okay. So let me start out acknowledging my students. The work I'll be presenting is a collective effort of the group, and the samples are from different groups around the world, Wang, Kalpa, and Isaki. And first I'll try to project the question we're asking in this conference to the global framework of physics. So we are focusing on how to get to higher TC, or are there new alternative routes to superconductivity? And near the end, hopefully, I'll use one or two slides to make a connection between another paradigm-shifting question within the condensed matter electron physics, if I have time. But this is certainly a major effort in the field. So I'm a spectroscopist, so that's why I'm in this session. And I use spin resolve ARPES with spin sensitivity and a regular ARPES, and also X-ray and a little bit of neutron scattering. And the work focuses on different compounds. And recently, we are finding a way to connect superconductors to this other new stuff, these topological insulators. And we also are involved in spectrometer development to take the field, say, resolution or sensitivity to address fundamental physics phenomena beyond this level. Okay, so this is sort of the focus of my talk. I'll talk about this electronic nature of nictites. Their PC is large and they have this complex multiband system. And in a multiband system, it's difficult for transport measurements to sort out the role of different orbitals. And that's where there's a very clear need for superconductivity. Connecting back to Paul Canfield's talk, many of the superconductors he listed, they're actually, if you look at the electronic structures, expected to be multiband. In cuprates, we are sort of lucky that we have a single band. We don't have to worry about it. So sorting out these issues is a critical thing. Another thing that emerged is that the Cooper pairs are small. So this is, in some way, it's good, relatively isotropic, and higher TC. And okay, so then if I have time, then I'll talk about, so this application is from energy or power point of view. So can we go beyond? I mean, it's just, we don't want to find higher TC, not just for power applications. So I'll propose that we can have potentially transformational impact by having higher TC in other areas. For example, in quantum computing, I'll propose that this topological insulator and superconductor in combination might provide a way where improving TC, which might even be easier than having impact with correlated superconductors. Okay, so nictites have been introduced by Paul Canfield. I'll not go into the details. So you can see that there is enormous amount of result on this. For example, neutron should show antiferromagnetic ground states. Optics would report gap opening, and quantum oscillation measurements would show small pockets. And this is, I'm talking about the undoped compound, the parent compound. So the quantum oscillation supports small pockets, 1 to 2%, the size of the Bion zone. And most of the ARPES measurements are reporting, say, multiple bands, which have been interpreted in terms of, say, exchange splitting, local moment magnetism, and all sorts of details. So I'll focus on asking this question, how can we clean up this mess, and what needs to be done from a spectroscopic point of view? Well, I mean, I'm not solving it, but I'll develop some strategy. Okay. So of course, as we have heard many times, ARPAS is of course a surface-sensitive probe, and how to make connection to bulk experimental probes? How can we characterize the surface in a way that we know when we are getting surface signal, and that's also material specific. So unlike cuprates, the single band is not the paradigm in nictites. There are five bands, and there is the phase diagram is complex. You have magnetism, superconductivity. Which band is doing what? It's a real challenge to sort out. So in this case, the role of spectroscopy that can do orbital resolve physics of nictite would be extremely valuable. So complex magnetism and superconductivity. So there are multiple approaches how to do that. And due to the lack of time, I'll talk about ARPAS and STM and take a single case. So we're collaborating with my colleague, Ali Yazdani, on the STM side. And this is the cleaved surface of strontium iron arsenide, 122 compound, the parent compound. And you can see that these parent compounds have this, this superstructure, this 2x1 reconstruction. So the right away you know that this surface is, this is not a good surface. So the idea here is the algorithm we are trying to develop is that how can I characterize the surface and treat it in a way and at the same time carry out the corresponding spectroscopic measurement so that I can have a clear sense what is surface, what is not. Because in a five-band system, if you have a surface reconstruction, it would be a terrible mess. I mean, even in cuprates, BSCO, there is some reconstruction that leads to so much trouble with the one band. Okay, so what we, I'll not get into the detail what the algorithm is. I'm happy to talk about it. So it turns out that this 122 compound, if you anneal the surface from 10K to 200K, you can get rid of this X Fermi surface pocket. And now your Fermi, remaining ARPAS Fermi surface started to look like you have the LDA two-band type of picture. This is a very broad point of view. And now you can see that you also got rid of the reconstruction in the STM picture. So now we're looking for different types of competing orders in a multiband correlated system. You have different types of order, and why not we first start out based on neutron or other measurements? We list the number of orders that have been reported and try to project that I have a simple two-band Fermi surface, and if these orders are realized, how would the folding pattern look like? So for example, this surface strontium ordering, this reconstruction would lead to a folding here, I mean image of this whole band over here. And if you look at the neutron, you'll see, you would expect some sort of folding onto the end. So these are the two main folding channels. Okay. Now you'll see that there are like more than 50 ARPAS papers on nictite in the archive, and you'll see that almost everyone would agree that there is something around gamma and something around M, but you can find variation as much as this. So you have this type of pattern at M, and some people will say, now I'm seeing something different, and what I'm seeing is right. So this leads to enormous difficulty in interpretation. What are you really measuring here? So what we have decided to do, we started out, okay, I have a five band system. I know the d orbitals involved here. I can calculate the ARPAS matrix elements and the polarization and the associated scattering geometries. And what we'll do sort of a heroic experiment. We'll go to 5 different synchrotrons and 6 different setups and map out all possible geometries you can do the do these measurements. If you do such mapping, that for example you can do S geometry, P geometry, M geometry, then you can exhaustively map out all possible bands. And again, by STM, you can also map out what are the surface bands. So end of the day, I'll not show you full all the EDCs, but end of the day, what you see in the parent compound, there is a clear reconstruction around the gamma point that this alpha 1 and alpha 2 bands are not reconstructed. Alpha 3 band has some sort of reconstruction, and you can confirm that this is a real reconstruction by, again, by this symmetry and geometry and polarization sensitivity that in some cases you'll see odd piece of the Fermi surface, another case you'll see even piece of the Fermi surface. So here is one example. If you're at the P geometry, then you are seeing this part of the Fermi surface, that one. If you're in the S geometry, you're seeing that part of the Fermi surface. So you see that this reconstruction, it has some sort of very clear hybridization origin, that it's a very dramatic contrast. In a strong coupling Hubbard model, if you calculate spectral function, you get dominated by the incoherent signal. I mean, you cannot see such a pure polarization and scattering signal. Okay, so now you have to believe me that I did that all over the Brian zone and mapped out all the band. And so this is the outcome in one direction, gamma to M. Now I'm showing all the bands that would appear from gamma to N. And so now then if I'm allowed to connect the dots, then I come up with something like this. So this is the electronic, I like to call it ARPES ground state. This is the ARPES ARPES ground state seen by ARPES. And it's very different from what you expect from LDA. But this is on a first sight, that this is the LDA picture. It also depends whose LDA you take. It's very different from LDA. So now, having come from, grown up in a cuprate community, it's I don't like to think in terms of single particle picture or say nesting picture, but why not give it a try? I mean, see if I can rule it out, although I don't see much incoherent weight. So this one simple way to connect this LDA band structure to the experimentally observed polarization resolved, orbital resolved band structure is, there is a simple way we can try. Let's consider pi zero folding, this gamma to M, pi zero folding. This is the band structure above the transition temperature. And now we start doing this pi zero folding. We start to fold, so they start to mix with each other. And this is, of course, the low temperature state is orthorhombic. It's not completely fourfold, although ARPES is not that sensitive to that. And so when you consider your sample, you cannot get rid of the domains. So if when you take the domain average of this folding process, you end up with a band structure like this. This is again, in some way, it's hypothetical that I just started out some sort of LDA band and I started to fold. And now my goal is the experimentally measured band structure. Can I find similarity with this band structure and the experimentally measured heroic band structure? This is the case. And one can see, although we're not imaging down here, we did not focus there, there's a fairly good, almost one-to-one correspondence. And one can see that there is a little gap over here. And again, I showed that this hybridization and the pure matrix element selection rules are quite dramatic, which suggests that this is a hybridization gap. So I'll not conclude anything, but I found that this fact to be remarkable, that you can do pi zero folding and find a remarkable agreement with data. So I'll not conclude anything beyond that. Of course, it has band renormalization and other things. Okay, so having done that, I use those tools and ideas to address the superconducting state. So that's the undoped ground state. Now, again, you'll see dozens of papers, including ourselves. We had a paper on superconducting gap in 2008. And you can see that this is 2008. And of course, I did not do this orbital resolve topology measurement. So now that we learned a lot about the system by doing this exhaustive mapping, so one thing we figured is that there are ways to suppress one part of the band and one piece of the Fermi surface and keep the other. The reason we want to do that, if we want to look at the line shapes of these quasi-particles, I have to select one channel. So we are utilizing that strict selection rule to select one channel. So if I can randomly, I'll see two or three Fermi surface around gamma, but if I select one channel by utilizing the suppression idea, then I can isolate a single quasi-particle band. And the samples are, by the way, very good. Delta TC is 1 Kelvin. And so I am allowed to think beyond just tracing the band. Now I can go back and ask this question, how do I make sure that this is not surface superconductivity? So what we see is that particular band or any other band, they disappear, the superconducting gap disappears at the bulk TC. So it's fairly bulk representative that on the surface, the band I isolated, it's bulk representative because the superconducting gap disappears. There is no pseudo gap problem here in MCTAG. So I can check the bulk representative aspect of the data. So then I can do some sort of analysis, whatever you want to call it. But I'll not read too much into it, like Tom. Previous speaker discussed some details about this analysis, but I'll not talk about that. But I can extract a Fermi velocity from here. That's very safe. I don't even have to fit to extract the Fermi velocity. So average Fermi velocity around the gamma point is about 0.7 eV. And if I take the average value of the gap near the gamma point, delta gap over TC is about 6. And I can also estimate, since now I have a Fermi velocity, I can estimate the Cooper pair size, which is on the order of 20 to 30 angstrom. And when I extracted this Cooper pair size, which is like the coherence length, I did not know there was HC2 measurements. You can go back and do HC2 measurement. Paul Confield showed those measurements. And it's remarkably, you get the same size from HC2 measurements. Again, if this bulk band is not bulk representative, you will not get these remarkable numerical agreements. Okay, so what have we learned so far is that although this is a short coherence length here, and we know that from HC2 is that it's nearly isotropic. So what is interesting is that connecting to last Monday morning's talks, that sort of short-term goal is to get isotropic system, 3D superfluid response around, say, TC with 100 Kelvin. So we're not too far off. It's factor of 4, and TC is probably factor of 3 or 4. So there is hope. Okay, so having addressed that, so it's the idea there is that in a multi-band system, you can still get small Cooper pairs, and isotropy is probably easier to achieve in a multi-band system. Superfluid response could be three-dimensional. Okay, so far we have been thinking isotropy and super small Cooper pair physics in connection to energy applications. Why not we expand our search? In other words, what are other potentially high impact areas where raising tissue could have transformational impact? So one idea I would like to propose is that if you interface a superconductor with a topological insulator, I'll mention that in a minute, what that object is, you could get protected modes. And these protected modes could be, used for fault tolerant computing. There are all these theoretical ideas. And I have 1 minute, so I will say that we have identified a whole bunch of topological insulators in last 2 years, and they have very exotic properties, and it could be possible, again, due to advancement in spectroscopy, spin-resolved ARPS. And so we have now real material. Now, how do you get these topological objects? How do you get muon or fermions? They're supposed to be at the interface of S-wave superconductors and topological insulator. And there are proposals how you do quantum computing with this object, muon or fermions. So it's not very different from, FIFAF or cold atom or other Ruthenet proposals. The exciting thing here is if your TC is large, even if you're doing S-wave, you can do this stuff at higher temperature than the FIFAF state or Ruthenet or cold atom. So potentially you can, if you raise TC, even if it is a S-wave superconductor, not so isotropic, you're fine. You can, in principle, you could do completely new things. Just 1 minute to summarize. And to do that, you need to tune the topological insulators at the Dirac point, like people do in graphene. And very recently, we succeeded in doing that. And we showed that the topological order survives stable at 300K, so which is very exciting. It's like seeing quantum Hall effect topological physics at 300K. OK, so I reached my conclusion. Do we have time to read? OK. So the first part of my talk, I suggested that this iron nictite seems to be a paradigm because they're to search for higher TC with potential application stuff, because it's already fairly isotropic and it's multiband system. And then I mentioned what is the role of spectroscopy, that the multiband physics spectroscopy become relevant. And so that's that. And these ideas can potentially guide material search, narrow down the phase space, where to look for them. They don't have to be a doped MOT insulator necessarily, as nictites seem to be suggesting us. And spectroscopy, you have to combine real and momentum space because your Cooper pair is small. And the huge frontier of spectroscopy is new light source. And DOE has effort along that line. I'm a member of this team producing this document for DOE. And then again, I suggested we can even think about higher TC in the context of other applications beyond power applications. Thank you.
Okay, I think it's very beautiful measurement. The first part, second part, I don't even understand what it has to do with this conference. But anyway, the first part is very nice, and I think it's very clearly demonstrated in these particular materials, surface is really qualitatively different from the bulk. Because interpretation, I think, is very logical and most likely correct. There is anti-ferromagnetic gap induced, and it's induced only in some bands and not in the other.
Yeah.
And it's rather small. At the same time, we know for a fact that in the bulk, 90% of Fermi surface is going away. There's no such thing as ungapped Fermi surface. We know that from Hall, we know that from optics. We also know that magnetic moment in the bulk is one Bohr magneton, which is substantially larger than what this splitting would imply. So I think at least in anti-ferromagnetic case, we see that this that at least magnetism on the surface is very different. And that's an interesting question and challenge to answer why it's so different. What specific things? How do you know magnetic moment in the bulk? There are two independent ways to know. First of all, in optics, they see that plasma frequency squared drops by about order of magnitude when you go from non-magnetic to magnetic state. And second, in Hall, you can see that Hall concentration also drops by about the same amount. So I think it's pretty reasonable. Right. Yes, absolutely, yeah. No, absolutely, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That is small sections are remain, but not an entire half of the Fermi surface as in these measurements. So I think it's an important difference. And if I can say the other thing I wanted just maybe a personal remark, I don't think you should say that LDA calculations depend on who is doing that. That's not exactly true. That okay. The same thing is to say that ARCUS depends on who is doing that when two different people use two different photon energies. There's really anomalous difference between calculations done in experimental crystal structure and optimized crystal structure. And the picture which go in the literature, they're always calculated for different crystal structure. That's why difference comes, not because
It's actually, I found different symmetry assignments. That's what I meant, not the how many bands are, it's like what are the mirror eigenvalues of certain bands. I can show you the difference. I mean, I made a table that different LDA groups giving different symmetry assignments.
Okay, yes. But in defense of spectroscopy, yes, the surface is different from the bulk, but we can identify exactly why and where and not be misguided by it. So it don't take away that this measurement is meaningless.
I just want to get the experimental situation straight. So I've been seeing a lot of different photoemission data,
right.
Based on the same Hallfeld Pnyk-Tide system. And it occurred to me that sort of every experimentalist had its own Fermi surface, et cetera, right? Very, very confusing. So your claim is that you have figured it out, and it's basically a mix of two things. A, know your surface, this is reconstruction business, and B, the polarization dependence business, and I guess that
Orbital symmetry assignments. I mean, you have, you start with 5d orbitals. You cannot get, you're not, make sure that you're not saying something that's talking about f orbitals.
Let me put it this way. It's pure experimental thing, right? So you are capable of basically identifying what all your competitors have measured in terms of your complete mapping of the Fermi surface. You can say they get this piece and that person gets that piece.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can I just ask a technical question
at
the beginning part of your talk, which is very beautiful? Were you using the ideas of nesting and folding on the same basis?
No, I did not use any word nesting or anything.
Okay, so where
I showed the experimentally ARPS band structure.
Yeah.
Then I argued that there is if you ignore the symmetry assignment, because different LDA calculations, they're assigning different symmetries. I'm just ignoring that, and all I'm doing, taking LDA and just imposing a pi zero folding on the band structure. And then I see that I can account for all the bands. I'm not talking about nesting or any of that stuff.
Okay.
Nesting requires looking at, say, Linhart function or susceptibility divergence, all sorts of things. That's why I remain inconclusive.
The folding argument is basically a geometrical
argument. Exactly. And of course, I did not mean to say I solved the problem.
Okay.
Of Nick died. Yeah.
Sorry. Question: you showed
some data for a superconducting state.
Yeah.
An obvious question, what can you say about the gap structure? Can you measure gap along?
Yeah, we did that. We can get a fit to the cosine times cosine. I did not get into that due to lack of time. Yes.
So you don't see any nodes?
No node. Well, we haven't ruled out, since on the gap measurement it's very tricky. We do see KZ dependence. There is oscillation. This material is three dimensional, and we're actually writing a paper calling. Title with three-dimensional band structure of iron arsenide. And what we haven't done is that we haven't measured the gap structure at each KZ value. So we haven't ruled out that along the C-axis there is no node. At least our work, we haven't. I don't think anybody has done that. You have to do that for every KZ value to say that this material does not have node. So as far as our data is concerned, we did not rule out a node. It could be a nodal superconductor.
I have a question on your very last transparencies.
I'm sorry?
About your other application of high RTC.
Right.
How hard is it to actually build these junctions of
a superconductor
with right. substantial TC and the topological
yes.
insulator?
That's a very good question. There is a Russian group, there is a paper in PRL, they have shown that if you take bismuth antimony and put lead on it, you can get good contact. There is no significant Schottky barrier. You get a good junction. But most of the data I showed, ideally bismuth antimony has multiple Fermi surface, surface states, which includes trivial and non-trivial, so you'll get mixed signal. So the right question to ask is, can we make a contact with a superconductor with this new series, bismuth selenide or bismuth telluride, this series? That nobody has shown that yet. But on the... No.
I'd like to ask you about a particular M point in iron pinctides. I think Arpes group from Dresden proposed that there is some kind of propellers.
Yeah.
Do you see?
The data I showed, I did not show any superconducting data. They're proposing that on the doped superconductor.
Yes.
The data I showed is on the undoped compound, and that's, I would not bet on what happens. We'll go back and check.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Well, then let's thank the speakers, and we have half an hour. We come back at 4:00.